This hour of the Jason Rancho brought to you by Robbins & Company Structural Moving and Foundation Repair. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. It's time to find out what's trending.
What's trending at home?
So we've had the weekend to look over the data coming from this homelessness report from King County. And it was put out right before the weekend. And it confirms what a lot of you already know. But then you look at some of the specific details and it's actually worse than you think. Getting worse. In fact, that's a good way to talk about homelessness. Not only is the report worse than you think, homelessness is worse. We've seen an increase of 4% in people living out on the streets. Despite the fact that we're spending tens of millions of dollars, we have this crisis. Everyone is talking about it in King County, in Washington State. And they're putting their best efforts forward. Regardless, things have gotten worse to the tune of 4%. Although I also suspect that that number is lower than the actual truth. You've got right now over 12,000 people living out on the streets. We are the worst, the third worst in the entire country. And the increase is primarily represented by people who are living in their cars, who are living in their broken down RVs. And I would argue the reason we're seeing so many people living in their RVs and broken cars, especially in the Seattle area, which is the most densely populated part of King County, is you can live there without anyone giving you a hard time. You have council members who don't really care that you're living in your RV. Let them sleep there. Let them go there instead of going into a shelter where we do have beds available, but let them stay in their rundown RV. That's a potential fire hazard. That is a problem since they don't have any running water. They don't have any plumbing. They don't have any easy access to get rid of the waste that's already sitting there in that RV. Oh, we don't know exactly who's in that RV, but we'll just let them sit out and camp out in front of your home in Eastlake or Ballard. Just hang out. It's cool. We're not going to tell you. Don't worry. You're fine. Who gives a sweet damn about the people who are living in those homes right across the street from your RV? Who cares if there's a park or a school nearby? You do you. We'll allow it. Then you look at this report and they say over half of the homeless population, they're not actually from King County originally. A big chunk came here after becoming homeless. And I remember at the meeting on homelessness in a particular specific camp in the South Lake Union neighborhood last week, they had two people who were homeless who gave a speech about the importance of tiny home villages. And the guy who spoke, the homeless person who spoke, said, "I came to Seattle homeless." Meaning he was homeless wherever it is he was originally from. He came here homeless. And then when someone in the audience asked a question about, whoa, why'd you come here if you were homeless? Immediately that question was shut down. Immediately it was shut down. The reason it's getting so bad in King County is because we are allowing it. The politicians in King County allow it to get bad. That's not the same in Pierce County, for example, where you've got Detective Ed Troyer from the Pierce County Sheriff's Department. He was on the Ron and Don Show on her sister station, Cairo Radio, on Friday afternoon. And he made it clear, if you keep coming to our neighborhoods and you're just camped out and you don't leave, we arrest you. We have jobs available. We'll help you get a job. But we're not just going to allow you to take over our cities.
And if they come back and they're on the ground trespassing, then they'll go to jail. But we need to have some teeth behind our laws, and we have to react and we have to do things or the laws are meaningless.
You guys hiring in Pierce County right now?
We are. Everybody is across the state, you know, and I understand Seattle PD's reaching out, you know, offering more money to a lot of our guys and other people around the state. Come work at Pierce County. We'd love to have you. And we still use handcuffs.
They still use handcuffs. That's different than the case in Seattle and King County. You can just hang out wherever it is you are. Doesn't matter. Remember the story a couple weeks ago, 3-4 weeks ago, of the homeless mansion right across the street from Cairo 7, where you've got a collection of tent cities, and we're not exactly sure if it's like one family that's just extended their tents and they've got like a whole bunch of tents, but it's right in the middle of the street, basically. And it's gotten bigger since the last time we spoke about it. And they added something. They added an amenity or a perk, I suppose, at this tent mansion. You know what it is?
A hot tub?
No, close though. I'll give you a hint. Fraternities use this to fill it with an alcoholic beverage that they pump and then get drunk off of.
A keg?
A keg. There was a keg there, and they were using it over the weekend, apparently. I've got the photo of it. I'm going to post it on our Facebook page later on today and at KTTH.com. They brought a keg there. Now, what bothers me the most about this entire story is that it is going to be used to promote affordable housing. All this whole study is going to be used to bring up affordable housing. Now, in the report, it says 98% of the Count Us In survey respondents said they would move into safe and affordable housing if it were offered. Now, I have a lot of reactions to that. I'll start with this. What's affordable to someone who has no job and no money? What's affordable housing to someone who lives on the street right now and has no money, has no job? What's affordable? $1? And if you were offered, you as anyone, if I gave you a home that was cheaper than what you currently have or free, would you take it? Yeah, depending on the circumstances, sure. So I don't know what I'm supposed to do on this. But let's ask you this. Is the reason they're homeless because they don't have access to affordable housing? I would say no. I know we want to pretend that that's the case because it seems popular to simply say we got to bring down, we have a housing affordability crisis. We do not have a housing affordability crisis. That conflates two different issues. One, I can't afford the home, and one, I don't want to pay as much as I'm paying for the home. I don't want to have to spend as much as I'm spending on rent every single month. I can afford it. I pay for it. I've got a ton in savings, but I don't want to pay for it. I don't want to pay $2,150. I don't want to pay that, but I do. And the thing is, we conflate those two issues. But let's push that aside, because I'm told on a regular basis that the people who are living on the streets, virtually all of them, they were just one missed paycheck away from missing their rent and ending up on the streets. I don't buy that for a second. Because it's just not true. And then you go into the data of the study, and it says the largest chunk of people who are homeless are quote-unquote chronically homeless. What does that mean? It means not only have they been living out on the streets for a very long time, at least a year consecutively, but on top of that, they're living with some kind of disabling condition like, psychiatric issues. So if you are chronically homeless, you've got a psychiatric issue, a mental issue that has not yet been treated effectively by medical intervention. If I were to give that person a home, all of a sudden you're going to tell me they'll be fine. They're no longer going to be homeless. They're chronically homeless for a reason. There is an underlying problem that we're completely ignoring. There is a root cause of this homelessness that no one addresses by simply saying, we need more affordable housing. Only a quarter of the people who they spoke to, 25%, said they're homeless because of a job loss. That means 75%, the vast majority of the people who are living out on the streets, they're homeless not simply because they couldn't afford the rent.
Your home just doesn't vanish because your job has gone.
There's so many different options. And I know, well, you know, they've got a social circle and they can't just leave their $2,000 a month apartment. They can't just go into that Northgate home that's basically the same thing, but $1,100. Can they afford the $1,100? Yes. Can they afford the $2,000? No. Well, then they should move. But they've got a sick mother that they have to take care of, and she lives a few blocks away. Well, then take the bus, because you know what? You're not going to be able to take care of your sick mother if you're living out on the streets.
And why is your sick mother living in expensive areas of Seattle?
Well, she can afford. She doesn't actually like the kids. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
So, unfortunately, over the weekend, there was an... There's a soccer segment.
It's not even worth it.
Did you tell him to just force me out?
Yeah, that was my idea. I thought we, first of all, running out of time. Second of all, we try to stick to important topics on this show.
There's a Sounders
worth talking about.
On Saturday.
We can get into the Mariners.
Maybe when they win.
Well, then we're never going to talk about the Sounders this season. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. We are live in the Online Trading Academy studio on this Monday morning. If you want to join the conversation, you can send me a text message, 1-800-465-8770. That's the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline, 1-800-465-8770. Rather remarkably, the House is now a toss-up, meaning it could actually stay in the control of the Republican Party, or maybe it can go into the control of the Democrats. In other words, that blue wave that we were told for the longest time was inevitable. It's 100%. It's going to hell. Oh, look at that blue wave. Turns out that, at least right now, it's a complete and utter myth. That right now, it's an uncertainty. Now, historically speaking, you expect either the House or the Senate or both to go into the hands of the party opposite to the party in power in the White House. That's generally how it goes. And I expect, even on June 4th, 2018, that the Democrats will regain control of the House. But the thing I've been saying this entire time is it's not going to be a blue wave. You're out of your mind if you think it's going to be a blue wave. At least right now, there's no indication that that's going to happen. The only indication that a blue wave is happening is that Democrats who are running for office are claiming that a blue wave is going to happen. According to this poll, it's out of CBS News. Dems right now would get 219 seats, and Republicans right now would get 216 seats with a margin of error of plus or minus 9 seats, meaning those 9 are still up for grabs. It could go either way. Well, you need 218 if you want to be majority. So let's just go by these numbers and suggest that 219 is what the Democrats end up getting. That means you get nothing done. You can have a slim majority. A slim majority doesn't mean anything in the House. You can still get stymied. And then, of course, if the Senate is still in the control of Republicans, almost none of what you pass in the House is going to go anywhere. If this statistic is true, if this poll is true, that's rather extraordinary. I mean, that's insane. When you look at the generic Republican ballot, they just say, would you rather vote for a Republican or a Democrat? Republicans are on the uptick. Democrats are going down. Why is that? Why is that? Really easy. Really easy. Democrats are squandering this. They are so virulently anti-Trump. And the media is so virulently anti-Trump and anti-Republican. You have the exact same circumstance with people and voters than you did in 2016 when they decided to vote for Donald Trump. At some point, they are sick and tired of your negativity. They are sick and tired of you turning every positive story because it's attached to Donald Trump as a negative. Right now, you have 3.8% unemployment. That's the lowest it's been since April of 2000. People across the board saw an increase of almost 3% in their hourly wages. And instead of that being a positive story, what are Democrats doing? They're downplaying it. What's the media doing? They're focusing only on the negative. They point out that the rates of people outside of the workforce is still rather high. And they blame it on the growing opioid epidemic. Did they do any of that during Obama's term? Did you ever hear any of that kind of, well, I know the employment's going down. We're at 4.2%. But did you know that people who are outside of the workforce due to the growing opioid epidemic is increasing? You never heard any of those caveats in the coverage. It's because President Trump is someone they don't like. They like President Obama. And so you don't get any of that. Nancy Pelosi turned this unemployment number, historically low, into a negative, into a bad news. She put out a statement. Let me pull it up real quick. May's job report showed that strong unemployment numbers mean little to the families hit with soaring new costs under the Republicans' watch. Republicans' cruel, cynical healthcare sabotage campaign is already spiking families' premiums by double digits and pushing millions off their coverage. That part's a total lie. That's a total lie. Because the Republicans didn't kill or sabotage Obamacare. Obamacare was already financially unstable. We knew years and years and years ago that the premiums were going to go up. Republicans weren't to blame for that. That was the system because not enough people were healthy buying into the system. More people right now are spending money than they were in the past. Right now. More people right now are spending more money than they were in the past. They're going on vacations when they didn't in the past. Consumer confidence is up. Most people out there, 90% of everyone who's listening to my voice right now, saw a rise in their take-home pay thanks to the GOP tax plan. And you mean to tell me that's all bad news? They're trying to blame gas prices on Trump. Gas prices, high or low, are never, ever, ever to blame or credit any individual presidents. That's not how gas prices work. You'd know that if you weren't such a hack, Nancy Pelosi. Maria Cantwell. Blue wave. You're losing your blue wave right now? But the media says Republicans are evil and Trump is evil and things are bad. How is it possible? Maybe you're losing the blue wave because your talking points are based on lies. Just throwing that out there. You want to join the conversation? Tell me why you think the blue wave is going away. 1-800-465-8770 for your text message. 1-800-465-8770. It's the Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show, live on this Monday morning. Hope everyone had a really relaxing weekend. I'll say this, Samantha Bee was probably a little relieved that on Friday, instead of going into the weekend thinking she would be at the forefront of all the news coverage of all the Sunday shows, she just, this is her Friday night was like this, whew, because Joy Reid is back in the news again, because this, the funny part about this is more people are going over her old blog than they did when the blog was active and being published. Like, people are now, reporters are going back and checking out the blog and realizing that she's an insane person who is a bigot, who is potentially a 9/11 truther, at least at the time she was. She held anti-Semitic beliefs, which I'm assuming she still holds, even though she tells me she doesn't. But people are still going over, poring over Joy Reid's old blog, and it's back in the news. Back in the news for a variety of reasons. We talked about some of the blog posts on Friday and Thursday. She published posts defending 9/11 truther conspiracies. We found out on Friday night, thanks to the Daily Caller, that she posted some anti-Semitic comments. And according to a story out of the Daily Beast yesterday, more and more MSNBC staffers are saying, gosh, you guys, we're handling this so poorly. They're saying they're embarrassed by how the company is handling all of these blog posts. And so to give you a quick timeline of what happened, you'll remember the first part of this story was a bunch of homophobic and transphobic blogs. The types of jokes, and yes, they were jokes, but the types of jokes that people like Joy Reid right now say, inappropriate, you shouldn't even be able to have a job if you make jokes like this. Going after Ann Coulter and calling her a man. Going after former Governor Charlie Crist of Florida, saying that he had a beard, meaning he was married to a woman, but really he's gay. She acknowledged all of those jokes, and she apologized. And on the left, no one said anything. They accepted it. They moved on because apparently progressives can evolve on issues. Conservatives can't. If a conservative held a viewpoint years and years ago, decades ago, that is no longer popular and he or she has since changed their tune, all of a sudden, that's not evolution. That's just doing it for political expediency. They're still bigot. They're still bigot. But for Joy Reid, it's cool. Thumbs up. MSNBC stood behind her at that point. So then a little bit later, we found more homophobic and transphobic posts. Although now we also found Islamophobic posts, which, remember, any kind of criticism of Islam is deemed Islamophobic, and the left will go after you, call you a bigot, call you Islamophobe, tell you that you shouldn't hold a job, you shouldn't be on media, certainly. But at that point, Joy Reid was all like, actually, I was hacked. Someone not only hacked me, but they hacked the Wayback Machine, which is this website that basically takes photos of old stuff online before it's deleted. Someone apparently hacked that. And by the way, I can prove it because I've got my own security professionals looking into it, and they came back and said there was no proof of a hack. But I don't remember saying all this stuff. Yeah, I said all the other homophobic and transphobic stuff, but now I don't remember. So now I'm going to call the FBI, and I'll have the FBI open an investigation into this hack. MSNBC, at that point, stood behind her. No one believes the hack story. Virtually no one believes that. The people she hired couldn't find any proof that a hack happened, which means
it didn't happen.
And it was a weird position for her to take because she could have just said, I'm sorry. Again, these were blogs I wrote 10 years ago, 12, however long ago it was. Much like the first time I apologized, I no longer hold these views. You're going to find a whole bunch of stuff there that I no longer believe in. Maybe I took because I was just trying to get attention. Whatever it was, she could have just apologized. But instead, she drags the FBI into it. And yet still, MSNBC stands beside her. So now's the latest. More horrible blog posts. Posts promoting 9/11 truth or conspiracies, posts including a doctored photo of John McCain as the shooter from the Virginia Tech massacre. This one is particularly alarming. She praises Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad's proposal to relocate the, quote, Zionist regime from Israel to Europe. So she wants to get rid of Israel, move it into Europe. And then she had more attacks on the looks of conservative women, more arguably Islamophobic positions. She went after Laura Ingraham and Ann Coulter, who both discussed this on Friday night on Fox News.
One was she was wishing for you and me to be left in the public square in Iraq, which I think is interesting because I agree. I wouldn't want to go to a majority Muslim country. I don't know why liberals want to turn this country into those countries. But that's she considered that really, you know, the worst thing you could do to us. And then in a separate post, I guess she liked or retweeted someone suggesting that I don't know if it was just me or both of us kill ourselves. And then, of course, there was the always popular calling me a man for having a beautiful swan-like neck. Liberal women, as long as we're being frank here, aren't used to that because they have rolls of fat on their neck. They're really taken aback by my beautiful swan-like neck. God.
So how is Joy Reid reacting to the latest? Because it could go either way. She's either going to apologize or she's going to blame a hack. This time she decided to go back and apologize. So she went back to the way she originally responded. She apologizes. She says, quote, "There are things I deeply regret and am embarrassed by, things I would have said differently and issues where my position has changed. Today I'm sincerely apologizing again." Again, I don't know why she didn't do this instead of pretending a hack took place. She could have just done this, but because this is now the third instance in which she's having to play defense for her just disgusting blog, it's a little bit too much. And so according to the Daily Beast, they're saying many of Reid's MSNBC colleagues are embarrassed by the network's handling of it, and particularly they're focused on the hacking stuff. Quote, "Everyone in the building is laughing at the idea that it was a hacker," one MSNBC staffer told the Daily Beast. "It's just a joke," said another employee. Several LGBT staffers at the network expressed feeling insulted by how Reid seemingly suffered no consequences for her old homophobic blog posts or transphobic tweets. "How many apologies do we need?" another staffer asked. And it's interesting when we talk about the story in the context of everything that's happening right now. Joy Reid makes all of these horrific statements on her blog. She is not only defended, but she's celebrated over at MSNBC. Samantha Bee on TBS calls Ivanka Trump the C word. And not only is she defended, but people said she didn't go far enough. It wasn't even truly an insult. That's what some folks online said. Supposed feminists like Sally Field and Minnie Driver, two actresses. Joss Whedon joins the conversation, even though he's hardly a feminist. He likes to talk about how feminist he is, but he's got a past that's arguably not very feminist. He was defending Samantha Bee. And yet Roseanne fired immediately for a joke. A racist joke. A joke she should not have uttered. Ambient or not. Why is there such a double standard here? I take a very clear position. I don't think people should be fired for this kind of content. I don't think Roseanne should have been fired. I don't think Joy Reid should be fired. I don't think Samantha Bee should be fired. I think that if you don't want to watch whatever it is that they're doing as a result of their content, you will lead to them being not fired, but laid off. Because you won't be a consumer of their product. I'm okay with that. I mean, certainly there are some things that can be said that go way, way, way too far. I generally don't think jokes are one of them, and I certainly don't think we should be judging Joy Reid by what she wrote 10, 12, 14 years ago.
Isn't that bad business practice, though, to allow the show to continue that inevitably going to get such low ratings that you need to lay
them off? Is it inevitable?
I suppose there's
a lot of
people
that
don't know
that, right? I mean, but that's my point is, if it's not inevitable, the only thing any of these media corporations should be concerned about is whether or not they can sell advertising to the show and if people are going to look at the show, right? If they're going to read the magazine articles or the blogs or listen to the radio show, whatever it happens to be. If you're in a world of comedy like Roseanne and Samantha Bee are in, even if you don't particularly like their comedy or their jokes or their style, whatever it happens to be, that's a little bit different than Joy Reid, honestly. But Joy Reid, I believe that people can evolve on topics.
Right, and then when the advertisers start to leave, that's what the company can say is the reason for
exactly. That's all it's
being
about.
Being laid off, yeah.
But instead, the left wants to have it both ways. The left wants to go after people and say, because you hold this position, even if you held this position a decade ago, you should not be allowed on TV. Our people, who hold equally disgusting, in air quotes, positions, they should be allowed to stay on there because they've changed their tune. What about that? It doesn't matter. It's all about perceived politics. Chelsea Handler, we're not going to get into it yet, maybe later on in the show. There is a clip of her on Twitter that has been spreading. It was from one of her recent sets in which she makes fun of black people. She's a white woman of privilege, I'm told, by the left. She decided to go after black people and use them as jokes. Now, again, normally I would say, if that's your comedy, that's your comedy, right? That's your set. But people like Chelsea Handler are so sanctimonious about the bigotry of Republicans. How dare they say this and that? How is what Chelsea Handler did any different than what Roseanne did? You're playing into racist humor. So you can't have it both ways. The only difference between a Chelsea Handler and a Roseanne, both white, both women, right? Both comedians, both made bad racist jokes. The only difference is perceived politics. Roseanne perceived as a conservative when she's not even one, but she's perceived as a conservative. Chelsea Handler is undoubtedly a progressive, and we give one side a pass when the other, we just fire. It's just weird how this all works out. And no one on the left has been able to tell me why we should have different, like legitimately different bars on what we're using to judge people. No one on the left has been able to tell me that. Now, if you're a member of the, if you're a progressive, thank you for tuning in. I really do appreciate that. Give me your argument. Send me a text, 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho. I'm not entirely sure I know why this next story is being discussed again, because it's based on a poll that was done a while ago, and yet on Reddit, they are talking about it a lot. It has to do with whether or not you can buy happiness. It's one of those topics that we talk about. It seems like every single year there's a new study that says if you earn this much, you'll be happy. But more than that, you'll probably not increase your happiness quotient. I'm assuming that part of the reason why this poll is back in the news again and people are talking about it is because of the constant conversation we're having about housing affordability in Western Washington. The study says the Seattle, Bellevue, Tacoma area, you have to make $105,000 to be happy, and any more than that, you're not going to increase the amount of happiness that you experience, meaning that it starts to peak at about $105,000 for the most part. Obviously, there's some context to it. If you're a billionaire, but you're going to die in a month because of a sickness that you have, you're not going to be truly happy as a result of the money. We're taking all that aside, just all things being equal, and the only thing that's different is the amount of money you make. $105,000 a year is where you hit that peakness. And they are discussing it in the context of rent, but let's also discuss it in the context of how much you pay in taxes. Because I have to assume that the richer you get, at some point, you hit that number where you've got so much money, it doesn't matter how much you're paying in taxes because you're still a billionaire overall. But there is a point where you hit that number and it feels like you're still making about $75,000 a year or $60,000 a year because of how much taxes you're paying. And so you're working your tail off. You're making more money, but you don't actually see any of that money or majority of it because you're giving it in taxes back to the federal government, but also the local municipalities and the state government. So I kind of believe this idea. I don't know if the $105,000 is based on that, but I can tell you this. I ain't happy, and I make good money. I'm not particularly happy. And the more money I have, the happier I tend to be because I get to spend it on things that bring me joy. What do I love to do? I love traveling. Love it. I can't afford to travel whenever I want. I still got to come to the show every single day. I'd love to be able to just take 2 months and just go to Europe, right? And go wherever it is I want to go in Europe, fly there in first class. And like, there's all those things. And that's incredibly expensive. That brings me happiness.
Does this take into account household income, do you think, or is it individual?
It's household.
Oh, okay. Then I'm.
I mean, it could be household. I mean, it all depends on the individual, right? And that's why I hate studies like this. I'll say this. Because I do think that people are fooling themselves to ignore the context and just focus purely on money. If you've got a whole bunch of problems and you're a millionaire, it doesn't mean you're going to be happy necessarily. But the folks who say, oh, money doesn't buy happiness. The two types of people who say that are people who are poor and want to pretend that they're happy. And people who are poor and don't ever expect to make a whole bunch of money. Now, I don't want that mindset. I want you to think, I want you to know, because this is the truth, the more money you make, the easier of a time in general you will have. It makes life a lot more enjoyable when you don't have to worry about whether or not you're going to be able to pay your rent and a medical bill and fix your car in one single month, when otherwise it could wipe you out completely, right? You're going to be able to not have to stress over that, which means you have more time and energy to spend on things that bring you joy.
According to this, my wife and I are then happy.
But your wife isn't.
But the prospect of owning a house anytime soon is just non-existent. And that would make me happy to be a homeowner.
Right.
But our happiness number here is still not even...
But let's say you both made $105,000. Let's say individually you both did that. So you're coming in at $210,000, then you take out the taxes, which is almost half of that, if not half. I don't know what that comes out to with the Seattle. You're still, you can buy a home. It's not going to be the biggest home that you want. It's probably not going to be in the neighborhood necessarily that you want, but you'll have you'll clearly have an easier time finding that home under that than you would under what you currently make. It's just, I don't know if that equals happiness, nor do I think it doesn't equal happiness. If you had $1 million right now, you would be much happier than you are now.
I believe so.
Everybody would. Everybody would. I don't know why we lie. And I don't know who anyone who's making, let's say you make $40,000 a year right now and you're struggling to get by. I don't know if that person who makes $40,000 looks and says, man, you know what? I thought I would be happy if I made $105,000 a year or $110,000 or $1 million. But it turns out I'm going to be just as happy now making $40,000. Why are we saying that? Why don't we actually encourage people who are making $40,000 by saying, hey, if you work really hard, soon you're going to make $60,000. Then you're going to make $75,000. Then you're going to make $105,000. And you're going to be so much happier then than you are now. Instead of, oh, don't worry. Like we're doing them a favor by lying to them. They know we're lying. They know we're lying. So stop lying. 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rancher. That does it for hour number one of the Jason Rance Show. I think for the most part, anti-Trump mania is responsible for this weekend's anti-Trump news. I'll tell you why when we come back.